This is CliffCentral.com. Good morning. Yes. It's the day after the election. How was your voting day? We've got Pumi, we've got Sia, we've got you. You can get hold of us on 079-748-2090. You know, you can send us a voice clip, you can send us a picture, you can send us a text message, whatever you prefer.
Mm-hmm.
It's all happening. How was your voting day, Sia?
I didn't get to sing the national anthem in line.
Because you weren't in the line.
Exactly.
Wasn't that wonderful?
Lucky you.
Everything was so efficient.
Mine took an hour.
An hour? What time did you go?
Why were you in the queue?
Listen, I drove past the queue at... Because it was quite close to my house. So I drove past it like 11.
Uh-huh.
It was quite long. It was longer than when I went and joined it. And then I went past again at 12:30 and it looked substantially shorter. So I got into it. And it took an hour. They had like a guy who didn't know that D comes after C, scratching the names off manually. There were no scanners or anything. I don't know if it was on purpose. You know, you always think, oh, well, you know, maybe the IEC just don't like my neighborhood or whatever. But it just took an hour. Look, I got it done, but it shouldn't have been, because in the municipal elections it was quick.
Yeah, that's frustrating.
It took a very long. I thought maybe it's because they're two ballot papers.
That were. Very big.
Yeah, they were. And it just took a long time.
So interesting statistic about yesterday's national ballot paper was it was three times bigger than the ballot paper in 94. Yeah, but also
94 was quite short. Though.
94 was short. There were only 16 parties.
Yeah.
there
were 48, I think. That's crazy. Mm.
Wow. Absolutely.
But the IEC has come under fire from a lot of people for a lot of different reasons. Have you heard?
So yesterday was like news junkie day.
Yeah, so first of all, yours is quick and easy.
Very quick. As I did mention, I voted in Soweto just for the camaraderie
and
experience of, oh yes, Missy in Dobsonville. But I was already there by 9:30. I stood in line with three other people in front of me, but it was so quick. They just scanned all three of us. And I was out of there in less than 5 minutes. It was that efficient, that quick. And I have to admit, and I think I echo the sentiments of many people, because this is what I saw on social media. A lot of people were saying they didn't know who they were going to vote for, even as they stood in line.
I think that's just, that is plain, wanton, chosen ignorance. I mean, you can't stand there at the last minute and go, it's almost like, okay, well, I'm going to enter this game. I don't know the rules. I'm not sure how I win, but I'm going to go and enter anyway.
I wouldn't call it ignorance.
I don't think it's ignorance.
I think it is. I think it's like, you know what? By that stage, if you haven't made your mind up, you're just scared to say who you're really going to vote for. I think that's what it is.
It's more...
Or you're embarrassed that you're going to choose a party that's shit.
No.
Or you're embarrassed that everybody is equally shit.
Well,
yeah,
for me.
But then why participate? I mean, if you still don't know who you're going to vote for by the time you walk into that booth, you're wasting everyone's time.
No, I don't think that's the case, because, you know, I was factoring a wide variety of things. I look at the current political landscape and I think the ruling party needs to be shaken up. And I really do understand and get the value of all 47 of the other political parties in the running. But then you go, okay, if I do vote for a smaller party, what sort of impact will they make? Yes, you might believe in them, but okay, sure, it might bump them up to 7% as opposed to really giving the ruling party a run for their money. That's what I was factoring in. So literally as I stood and, you know, about to cast my vote, I was really going, oy.
Yeah,
or the decision was just, you see, like for Sia, the decision was so heavy. People were still calculating, trying to think how they're going to make their vote most effective.
Especially, yeah, will it make a difference provincially? Should it make a difference nationally?
Especially because proportional representation thing is too high a grade mathematics.
What do you mean? Break that down. Proportional.
That's how we elect people.
That's
to parliament.
How we elect people to parliament.
So you get into parliament by proportional representation by party.
Yes, the percentage leading to the number of seats you have. Yes.
Yeah. And that, I think, is what's also so higher grade, as you're then thinking about it and you're thinking, if I cast my vote here, will it be enough in the proportion? All of that stuff is very higher grade.
Yeah. You know?
It's like that meme with that all that mathematics calculation.
That just throws you off.
You know what? I just felt like after I'd stood there for about 45 minutes, I was like, okay, this is my last go at democracy. After this, because I've always been... Now, here's something I've ummed and ahed about. Not what party to vote for, but whether or not I should actually partake. Because I'm not a fan of this idea that, you know, it results in the best possible... It's a popularity contest, and I don't know whether that's the best way to elect the leaders of a country. I've always felt that way, and as Winston Churchill said, and this is actually a quote of his, democracy is a terrible system, but it's the best one of the most terrible systems.
What a shitty position to be in.
But that is the truth.
It's the truth, but it is shitty and frustrating to go, well, everything is crap, but let's choose the better of the crap.
It is.
It was a lot like making the decision to vote. Yes, it is.
I think that's my frustration. It's all just shitty.
So I went to vote at... I think it was at about 7:30.
You were one of those people.
I was totally one of those people. I'm always one of those people.
It is dark. It's becoming, you know, getting into winter, but you still got out of the house to stand in the queue.
So I am also very lucky that where I live, I'm sort of in the center of four voting stations literally within a 3-kilometer radius.
That's useful.
So
you could even
I can also just like drive past all of them and go, what does the queue look like? So I went to one that I actually didn't know was there, like a bowling club, which I'd never been to also.
Oddly enough.
Very weird. Very weird little...
Weren't there a lot of old people? Because I'd imagine the old people get up early to vote.
I was the only person there.
Really?
I parked my car.
What a pleasure.
Literally from leaving my house... driving to the voting station, parking my car, doing all the scanning and signing the form and all of that stuff.
Mm.
Literally, I was in and out of the house in about 30 minutes.
Yeah, I think it's all just...
That's so efficient. You see, I'm not thrilled about this democracy thing. And for me, the experience wasn't exciting or pleasant or enthralling. And I don't really... I understand people who are maybe not decided from the point of view that none of them are turning you on, especially the majority parties, right? The three big ones. They do nothing for me. I don't like any of them. I think all three of the three parties that we've got at the top of the ballot here are crap. The quality of the leaders in those parties are crap. Their language is puerile and rhetorical and nonsensical, and it appeals to populism and it appeals to emotion. And I think those are basic human behaviors. I don't think that any of it is appealing to values or to intelligence or to any of that stuff. So it's like a feeling you're trying to engender, and these guys are just feeling merchants. And as a result, they're feeling merchants. That's how they get their votes. They win a popularity contest, and then my own experience didn't help to make that any better because I didn't get there and go, "Wow, this is efficient," like you did or like Sia did. I felt the IEC had some kind of a lotto where unemployed people were able to join up, and if you could demonstrate that you could at least say the first half of the alphabet, then you could get in. And these are the people that the IEC had chosen to work there because it was hugely and hopelessly inefficient.
Oh, that's the other thing. At the voting station that I went to, I was quite like impressed with there were a whole lot of young people manning.
Maybe they sent your voting stations, the four around you, they sent the good people. They just sent shit people to mine. I don't know why. I mean, it certainly wasn't me. I was standing there with my sister in the line, and we stood for easily 50, 55 minutes. And then in the voting, and here's the other thing, right? I get that pensioners need to go to the front of the line, but shouldn't the pensioners have voted the day before? Done the special votes.
Yeah, I think they did.
Well, not in my bloody area, because right at the desk, as we were about to get ourselves crossed off on the list, three old people, one of whom was the smelliest old man I've ever smelt in my life. Some, like hopelessly unkempt old white guy who pushed in front of me, who stank like he just shat in his pants. And this guy gets in front because he's old. And I thought to myself, you know what, actually, this guy didn't stand in the queue. I've been standing here for an hour. Now he pushes in. He didn't bother to bath this morning or shower or whatever. And it irritates me that a guy like that has the same vote as me. I'm not an egalitarian in that respect. I'm really not. Because I look at this guy, I'm like, he's probably got dementia, which is why he smells the way he does. I don't understand how he gets to him. How can he be a legitimate... I mean, he's probably... My sister said to me, do people who have, who like unrehabilitated criminals, do they get a vote? Well, once you're out of prison, yes, you do. You even get it in prison.
In prison, yeah. Too. In prison, too.
Now, to me, those people are kind of opted out of the system by committing crimes. I'm not talking about petty crimes like, you know, being caught with weed or any of that stuff. Those are obviously not. But if you're a murderer, like, why the hell should Oscar Pistorius have a vote? You know what I mean? I don't think that an unqualified franchise is necessarily the best way to elect leaders. And then I'm standing there, and this is reinforcing those ideas for me. So when I left, I was like, okay, I've done my duty. It was a feeling of duty. It wasn't a feeling of, like, I'm excited, and this is a great thing. And, you know, I was trying to think back to 94, and I thought of people who'd given up their lives for, and I thought, for this?
So, you know? To contrast that, I went to my parents' house, also, you know, took the opportunity to run lots of errands yesterday and drove to my parents' house and drove to my grand's house, and I was surprised to see still kind of a big festive mood around some voting stations. Sure. I actually have a little video that I took driving past a house in Meadowlands, Sia, your old hood,
mm-hmm.
with like a whole lot of like oldish people, because they didn't look too young, but they also didn't look very old, in their like ANC dukes and dancing and playing loud music. Mm-hmm. I drove past in Diepkloof. I drove past near the library. There was a guy with the biggest EFF flag I have ever seen, and he was waving his flag in the street, so with so much energy. Mm. And so that for me was also quite fascinating to watch, because I thought, oh wow, here are people who even
excited, they're excited about this. Yeah,
all of this. And I wondered how much of it of how we feel about it is also because of how much media we consume.
Yeah,
right?
Sure. So that's also it. Yeah, sure.
We consume.
I mean, for someone in particularly like outlying areas or places where maybe they've just been ignored by the media and by politicians for so long.
So I don't think ignored per se, but I think quite a variety of media things come at them. So they see their 7 o'clock news.
Yeah.
They hear the hourly news on the radio.
Right.
They're not like us following the Davies and the Robs and all of those people.
Sure.
So they're not constantly like consuming all of the stuff around what's happening and who's where and what's all of that kind of stuff. So their limited exposure to all of the stuff also makes it, for whatever reason, I suppose, still quite fun.
Right.
Mm.
For them, and still quite novel, and still quite an important part of what they're doing with their, you know, with their right.
Well, at the moment, here's some numbers for you if you are watching these and you want to know what's going on. So right now, as we speak, here are the statistics. 16.66% of the votes are in. 16.
Only,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but they've really only started to trickle in the last half hour to 45 minutes. And total valid votes, 1,739,000. Of those, 53.35% are ANC, 27.66% are DA, and 7.68% EFF. Those are the main parties. Vryheidsfront Plus comes in at 3.68% next. IFP at 1.52%, then the ACDP, good. UDM, ATM, COPE. Look at ATM, huh? 0.42%. But that's not bad at all. 7,321 votes.
That's not bad at all.
But they'll probably get a member or two in Parliament.
Look at that good, hey?
Yeah,
look
good.
At that, Patricia.
Well, ooh, she's got 15,229 votes so far. But remember, this is very early, so this is by no means an indication. And there are a bunch of provincial results starting to trickle in as well. The Gauteng provincial vote, only 8.95% calculated at this point, which is obviously much too small to start making a call.
Who are those 453 people that voted for Saudi men?
I was going to say, God. You know, since it's still early days, we can talk about the ATM, but ACM.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. They might just be home.
So somebody... you know, you see that clip that's been making the rounds with Saudi saying when he ascends to the union building, people are going to collapse.
Yes.
So I can tell you now, we are going to collapse or he's going to collapse.
I think we'd collapse if he even gets anything at this point.
The man trusts, he said he believes.
475 people so far.
For ACM.
Yeah.
Shut up. Shut up.
And I see Achang is still on the board. I thought they'd given up. Who's their leader at the moment?
Who knows?
Who knows, right? ZACP, that's Canton's people, have 0.07% so far with 1,259 votes.
More than Saudi.
More than Saudi, more than the BLF, which are at 992 votes. So there's stuff going on. We will keep you updated through the course of the morning on all of those numbers as they pile in and as they start to come through. But you can rest assured we'll have the latest news. We're also going to be joined later on by Gareth van Onselen. We're going to check in at the IEC's Results Operations Center. That's the ROC, as they call it. But we'll also talk to Masiho Shiburi or one other person at the IEC to just make sure what's going on over there. They said the ink, by the way, the indelible ink that we were meant to use, which I washed off as soon as I got home.
Oh, wow. You
straight away. They meant to use silver nitrate in there, which stains your skin.
Uh-huh.
Right. And silver nitrate doesn't rub off. It goes into the... It stains the whole of the epidermis. Silver nitrate is light sensitive, and they use that in inks. I got mine
Yours
off.
Yours is completely off.
Now, apparently, the IEC's chairperson said last night they're worried because they ordered the special formula from a certain company.
Oh, South Africa.
And it turns out that some people are alleging that they managed to vote twice and even more than that because they managed to get the ink off of their thumb.
Did you see what they do? Somebody posted a picture of what they do in Venezuela. They dunk your whole baby finger.
Oof.
Like your entire baby finger is dunked. It looks like you're in gentian violet.
Yeah.
I'm kind of wearing my mark as a bit of a badge of honor. Oh, yeah, I know. Second national vote. According to the Googler, the leader of Achang is Andres Kloama.
Okay, good for him.
Yeah, I don't know who he is, haven't heard of him.
All right, well, good for him. They're still up there somewhere.
I would, though, like to call all 400-odd people who voted for Saudi, though. Let's just have a caucus, let's sit down.
Yeah, let's all talk about why you did that.
To me.
But, guys, there were people sitting as he was talking. You know when they panned the camera as he's talking about his self-belief? Mm-hmm. There were people sitting there, people clapping along.
Yes, I know.
And I actually thought, who are... these bloody people.
But
and
that's how I feel the same about people. I feel exactly the same about people who vote DA, ANC, or EFF. I really do.
Who are these people? Millions of these bloody people, right. Gareth. Millions.
Yes. But that doesn't make it any better. There's no strength in numbers there. It's just, you know, just because it's a delusion held by many doesn't mean it's a delusion nonetheless, or it isn't, as the case may be.
But it's so.
Seriously. I do not get excited about just because a lot of people are into something doesn't mean it impresses me.
You know, I was also thinking that an election is also quite a sobering time for political parties to face reality because it doesn't matter how many T-shirts you hand out. It doesn't matter how many people pitch up to a stadium for your rally. People might just be bored and they're like, yeah, okay, let me go and check it out. Because it doesn't translate to votes.
Politicians in like sobering times, really, politicians generally have delusions of grandeur.
Yeah, they do.
You know, like those things.
I'll tell you, that's the first in the last 5 to 10 minutes while we've been talking, an extra 100,000 votes have been counted. How's that? In the national election. So wow. It's moving fast. I mean,
you know what else I noticed, and a friend of mine said this to me yesterday, is how many people, because there are so many voting stations and they're so close to a lot of people,
yeah.
Even in the suburbs, people were walking to the voting station. Mm-hmm. A lot of people were walking to the voting stations. And it was like, it's like an act of, and I mean, almost everybody, if you have the car, you drive.
Sure.
You drive everywhere.
Of course.
You
know?
But the walking to the voting station is some kind of, it seems like even in the minds of people who make the decision to go and vote, it's some kind of physical reclaiming of their country. You know, they're just
you're maybe attributing
station.
Too much to that. Maybe they're just trying to save an extraordinarily heavy petrol price.
But they don't save petrol price when they go down the road to other
countries. Because, look, I was going to say I'm all for trying to sing the national anthem, but miss me with the walking.
That might have been true. In 94 or 99,
I saw so many people walking, and you know when you see the Beckys walking, you're like,
when
you see the Beckys walking, then you know it's like it's real.
What are some of the conversations you overheard while you were waiting in line?
I was alone.
Oh, right. Gareth, gauge?
The person directly, there was a guy, two in front of me, who looked exactly like Cyril Ramaphosa.
Wow.
Which was hilarious. He didn't say anything. The woman in front of me said nothing. And there was that old man who pushed in front who smelt so terrible. Yeah. But none of them were saying anything. And then behind me were a couple. They were just kind of chatting about their children and stuff. There wasn't any, first of all, there were no visible party agents. I know that they're not allowed in the precinct or something, but I didn't see anyone wearing like party regalia at my station. No one.
I did have a moment of like irritation, and I wanted to take the pictures and send it somewhere.
What happened?
Because when I got to my voting station, you know, you're not supposed to have any further electioneering on site.
Yes, that's
so you
correct.
Can be outside the parameter, but literally almost at the door of the voting was this like Tani with all her like DA posters, with her stop EFF and ANC posters, and I was like, what kind of rubbish is this? But you know, at that point in time, I was just like, it's 7:30 in the night, she's been here all day and nobody called her out on her rubbish.
So technically,
You were there in the evening. I thought you were there in the early morning.
Oh, I was there at night.
Oh,
good.
So technically, you cannot promote a political party within the station.
Not technically, you are not allowed to. So you know, there's if you're
in the
like
grounds at the station
on the grounds. So if you're voting at a school, if you're voting at a library or whatever, they can be
in
the streets.
I saw nothing.
They can't be inside.
There were no people because last time there were people in the street with their setups. You know, all three of the major parties were at mine.
So like the guy with his EFF flag in the road.
That's
in
fine.
But you're not allowed to be inside the grounds waving your EFF flag.
Well. It really does amaze me how political parties still have so much pull and just like really rally up some sort of feeling within people. This I just saw my mother's age, sitting outside the school I voted at, and you could tell she was not someone official. She wasn't, you know, sent by someone from the ANC, but she just sat there with this ANC blanket over her knees and she just kept on waving it. And I'm thinking, wow, I wonder what led you to leave your house early in the morning. You aren't handing out any flyers. You aren't chanting anything, but you just wanted to sit there with your ANC memorabilia and just be seen.
Dude, I also saw a video on Twitter last night of a relatively old lady complaining about somebody telling her that the PAC is not on the ballot, and how if the PAC is not there, and no voter. I was just like, yes, Coco. She was just like, and I was trying to look how many votes the PAC got. She was just like, Lama Varara. She's like, totally. She's like, Ipatiam.
My goodness.
EPAC. Outside of that, I know vote.
Well, Anushka says, I got my husband to queue for me and he called me when he was in. Shame, poor man queued for 2 hours. I voted for Canton's capitalist party and I feel good about it. Someone says, in Barberton, Mpumalanga, a woman got to vote 3 times. A reporter tested and voted twice and filmed it. And there were a lot of pictures of people with their election, the ballot paper with their mark on it.
I'm like, dodos, what are you
you're
doing?
Not meant to, but I mean, like, who's going to arrest you? Yeah.
Well, the IEC was on a big kind of drive to say, and we're going to chat with them a little bit later, on a big drive saying, if you try and vote more times, but interestingly, when they, because I watched the press conference, I'm that geek.
You are also the person who reads manifestos, so we do expect this of you right now.
They did say that they have a mechanism of back checking. So you know when they're auditing before they say the final results and free and fair, all of that kind of stuff. So the double voting, they'll be weeding all of that out, because remember when you vote, they get your sticker. Da, da, da. So if they're like 3 stickers with your name, they have some kind of system. Yeah. I don't know why in 2019 they don't have a proactive system
Why don't we have an electronic system? Mm. Why is this the whole thing? We know that they've got it all electronically because otherwise they wouldn't be able to print those manual papers
or send us apps.
It's just crazy. Like, I also think I think we'd have a lot more people participating if you could do it on an app. Like, we would be able to, and there are ways to verify this these days that are much more foolproof than a bit of ink on your finger and crossing off a name on a list. I mean, that's so, like, rudimentary. We should be able to. I think people would be happy if the money was spent on making the whole thing electronic. Imagine if we could participate in referenda about big issues in South Africa. Almost every week there'd be something. You want to vote in this, vote in this.
Look, I think that would make a lot of people happy in a few places in South Africa. There are a lot of places in this country that are far flung, that are
sure, but they
that
carry
don't
on.
Even have like proper internet.
They obviously need to keep.
You know what
we
I'm
need
saying?
To keep
all
doing things manually
kind of
there, but we should have both.
Mm, the
There's
option
no
available
because ultimately, even those people in those far flung places need to eventually be brought into the 21st century and at least start experimenting with it in places that have the infrastructure. Anyway.
Yes. Let's so get into it. So much
well done
talk.
If you went to vote. I hope you feel good about that. That's excellent. And let's see what the results are as they start coming in today. A couple of stories in the news, but before we get to those, Reach for a Dream. Tomorrow is Slipper Day. It's a charity that makes dreams come true for brave little boys and girls with life-threatening illnesses. They need your help to support Slipper Day 2019.
Oh, yes, it's the 10th tomorrow.
Yes, make your contribution for just 10 rand at slipperday.co.za or buy a wristband at Wimpy, Dischem or Pick and Pay. Wimpy were giving away coffees yesterday for anyone who'd voted. If you showed them that you'd got a mark on your thumb, they would let you have a free coffee.
It is also Ramadan.
Oh, what does Ramadan have to do with?
Yeah, what has that got to do with anything?
The free coffee in the middle of the day.
Please don't ruin this moment.
Is that what they do for Ramadan?
No, you don't get free coffee. Cause, I don't like, know what it is. If they give you your free coffee, like, you can't drink it until...
Oh, don't ruin this moment for Wimpy. I like them. Thank
well, good
you.
For them.
Yes. We love Wimpy coffee.
All you do is get your friends and family involved, and you can wear your slippers to work, to school, or wherever on Friday the 10th of May. That's tomorrow. Not all heroes wear capes, so no matter what you do, don't forget Slipper Day on 10 May. Reach for a dream. Inspiring hope.
Yes.
I'm going to wear my slippers tomorrow. I've decided. I don't care what anyone says. I don't care if I've got meetings with really important people. I'm wearing them.
Yeah, I was weighing it out. What am I doing? I'll wear my slippers too.
All right. Police in Ghana in the news you need to know this morning. Police in Ghana have arrested 20 people accused of preparing to declare an eastern region as an independent country, police said on Wednesday. So you think we've got issues with the indelible ink? These guys were arrested in and around the town of Ho, which is some one Ho. Like that.
The town of?
Town of Ho, H-O.
I want to live.
150 kilometers northeast of Accra. They're accused of leading a campaign for a separate nation called Western Togoland. It follows the arrest of 8 men on Sunday. Those arrested include the group's leader, who's an 85-year-old man called Charles Kormi Kujorji.
Oh, yeah, boy.
Old people, my God. They face charges of conspiracy to commit treason as well as charges connected to the alleged training of a militia force. So there we go. The separatists are at it in Ghana. Interesting story. I know Sia was more blown away by this than by anything else. The pictures of Megan and her baby.
Come on now.
Archie.
Come
Archie.
On now.
I care less about that than I do about just about everything to do with the elections. And you know I'm not massively passionate about the elections. And the child's name is Archie Harrison.
Harrison.
His name is Archie Harrison. Like they watched an episode of EastEnders and picked two names.
Oh my God, guys. The funniest thing about Archie, because
I
don't know.
Stupid name for a child.
I don't know a single white person named Archie.
No. I don't know anybody called Archie.
And you know, there was lots of speculation about the child having an African name. And Archie, we've decided on Black Twitter.
Archie Moroka.
No. Oh. Well, Archie Moroka. Yeah. Somebody floated an Archie Moroka thing, and we were like, how?
But so what was decided?
Everybody has decided that Archie is the baby's African name, and it's actually a shortened version of Achieng. You know the girl that was on Ellen from Kenya?
Yes, Achieng. Goodness, no, folks. No, 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 no.
No, it's just, look, it's ridiculous. I mean,
it's not this, Archibald, guys. Is, it's just
no,
Archie.
It's just these two are so middle class, it just defies explanation. This is the end of the royal. Everybody enjoyed the show. This is the last real thing that will give the royal family any patina of decency from here on in. And you know, I didn't like Kate and William because I thought they were boring and middle class, but Jesus, Harry and Meghan are about to take this into Celebrityville. So get ready, everybody. The British royal family, it's finished. That's the end of that part of Western civilization.
Oh, shame.
Give it up.
Look,
Archie
Harrison.
I think
Alexander, as we were discussing on the show earlier this week, Alexander was speculations of them naming the child Alexander. I think that would have evoked more of a stronger connotation. Archie.
No one takes a person named Alex seriously.
And they just certainly
don't
take Archie.
Archie.
No, they do
not. I think Harry's going to have trouble getting this child taken seriously anyway. So
the reason
Meghan
why
Meghan will do better than him.
I am fascinated with the royal family is because they're royal.
Yeah.
They
well,
get
not these
to
guys.
Be superior. Then you are called Archie.
And you know why? You know why they went with Harrison? Because it's Harry's son. I mean, do it. They've applied their minds for all of 2 seconds. God, I hate this. When parents do this to their children, it is just, to me, it's a kind of child abuse. You're giving them zero runway.
It's so bad.
Oh, Harry's son. Harrison.
Listen.
You can imagine him and Meghan going, let's do this, Harrison. It'll be funny.
He doesn't need runway.
No, come
He's
on.
He's got, like,
well, as someone said yesterday, I mean, this is hilarious.
No.
So here's what I saw on the internet yesterday that I thought would make people laugh. New royal baby has already done 3 things on most of our bucket lists. Number 1, become a billionaire. Number 2, met the Queen. Number 3, sucked Meghan's tits.
Oh, God.
All right, let's move on.
Moving right along.
Yes, other things in the news. The UN has shifted its response as Ebola outbreaks in the DRC and the Congo have dragged on. Apparently, the United Nations is stepping up its response to Ebola in the DRC. It's now in its 10th month and needs additional resources that the Secretary General, Antonio Guterres, said on Wednesday. More than 1,000 people have died from the virus, the second deadliest outbreak on record after the epidemic that killed 11,300 people in West Africa in 2014 to 2016 had first started. Guterres said he was concerned by the number of new Ebola cases, praised health workers who have vaccinated over 100,000 people and saved hundreds of thousands of lives. Despite these efforts, the outbreak is now in its 10th month and has claimed more than 1,000 people.
Sure.
That's bloody scary. And don't forget, like, Ebola is really, really awful. It's a bad way to go.
Ebola's scary.
Oh, my God. And then Disney announced on Tuesday that they're producing 3 more Star Wars movies. Who knew this wasn't going to happen?
Dude, they're also, like, producing 4 more Avatar movies.
Avatar, Game of Thrones, Disney's Star Wars now, and they're also obviously going to keep doing the Marvel and DC Comics ones. So get ready for more of these fantasies because, of course, Star Wars didn't buy – I mean, Disney didn't buy Star Wars so that they could finish it after these 3 movies. They've got big plans, and probably most of them are shit. That means that there will be 3 years between Star Wars Rise of Skywalker, which hits theaters on December 20 this year, and the new film, which will debut in 2022. Two more Star Wars films will follow in December 24 and 26, according to Disney, which unveiled a new schedule on Tuesday that also includes release dates for four Avatar sequels, as Pumi said. The first Avatar movie is the highest grossing film in history, bringing in roughly $2.8 billion at the worldwide box office. That was back in 2009, 10 years ago.
Jeez, hey.
Avatar came out. It feels like just yesterday. It's crazy. And then how's this? The police went and bust a house in Holmby Hills, which is in Los Angeles, right? They found 1,000 guns. 1,000. They've taken a picture of all of the guns they pulled out of this person's house. More than 1,000 guns. Agents from the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives.
Yes, all those things belong together.
Yeah, because they're all the same things. And the LA Police Department searched a house. Someone suspected of manufacturing and selling illegal firearms. A man was placed under arrest at the scene for violating various penal codes. It prohibits the penal code in particular that he's in trouble with is the one that prohibits manufacture, distribution, transportation, importation, and the sale of any assault rifle. So they do have laws against guns in America for those people who still think that that's an issue. But this guy didn't care. No, most criminals don't care what the laws of you know, firearm ownership are. 1,000 guns this guy had. An aerial footage from the scene, hundreds of guns are seen scattered in what appears to be blankets in the driveway. The weapons range from handguns to rifles. Police can be seen taking inventory. Just unbelievable. And lots of ammo, too. The guy had huge amounts of ammo. So there we go. You know, you can make all the laws you want. California's got some of the most stringent gun rules in the world, and yet illegal people, surprise, surprise, will just flout those rules and do what they want. All right, so let's get to some election stuff, because this is what people are most excited about today. It's elections results day, and there's obviously plenty of stuff worth talking about. So let's get straight on to it. We've got on the line from the IEC, the deputy, the vice chair of the IEC, Janet Love. Janet, good morning.
Good morning to you both and to your listeners.
Thank you very much. So, Janet, first of all, congratulations on starting the counting this morning. I see close to 18-19% of the vote is in already.
That's correct, yes.
Yeah, so how has how's the process gone overnight? Have you guys had any problems? Are there any things that we need to be aware of as we start the day today?
Look, I think that the results are coming in actually relatively slowly, and I think that that is because, as we have indicated to the South African public, that as the commission, we are intent on making sure that we go through a particularly careful process, mm-hmm. because we've had a number of very serious allegations that are made, so we do have to ensure that each and every result is verified through our internal processes, as well as through the general auditing process that happens after votes are counted within the voting stations and are signed off by those people who are in the station, including party agents and observers. So I think that what we've done is attempted to ensure that we are going through those results as carefully as possible and ensuring that the internal checks are also done before we put results up. So, you know, we are, as I say, steadily putting in results, but not wanting to try and fast track things for the sake of it.
I heard there was a problem with the indelible ink. A lot of people were saying that they could get it off very easily, and I even heard the chairperson last night saying that they were very worried about what was going on. And whether or not this formula was acceptable, and you know whether the ink that they'd ordered was the ink they ended up getting, I managed to get mine off fairly easily. Is there any more controversy or any new updates around this this particular issue?
We are, as the chairperson indicated, concerned about the ink. I think, though, we also know that the inking process is something that has been happening, you know, for some time, including during by-elections that have taken place within the last couple of weeks. So, you know, it is, as you have indicated, it has been demonstrated that it is possible to remove the ink. As to how easy, I suppose it also It depends on how it's been put on and how it's been removed. But what we are indicating is that this is one of a number of measures that are taken within our systems in order to ensure that we are able to pick up issues that are problems. And one of the ways of picking up issues that are problems, and we have emphasized this also a couple of times, is to ensure that we're not looking at only the concerns about what could happen, what is possible to happen, but actually getting very concrete information about where there have been concerns and where there are things that we need quite specifically to follow up. And some of that comes from individuals, party agents, parties, and so on. And some of that comes, as I say, from the internal checks that go within our system.
Janet, you know, you speak about concrete information, and this is the first election that has had quite a high penetration of kind of social media activity. And we, having seen it in America, I worried, and I don't know how the IEC is responding to this, to a lot of stuff that's unverified that is circulating on social media. So a lot of kind of disinformation that is circulating on social media, hazy videos of people doing stuff, but you can't see everything else, and, you know, and all of that creates a cloud that kind of goes, is the IEC on top of all of this stuff? How is the IEC responding to all the stuff that's coming through on social media?
So thank you very much for that, Pumi. As I think you know, and we have been indicating to everybody in the country that we're very conscious of issues to do with disinformation that could happen through social media. Having said that, I think when we receive something, even in the form of a social media and a vague kind of digital media post that we, like you say, it's not very clear what's happening and all the rest of it, we're quite concerned not to automatically dismiss and not to automatically shy away from things that might be very complicated, might be very concerning to deal with. So there are two things that we've tried to do around this. The first thing is that we not only created the online portal for the reporting of digital disinformation, but we have, and through that, we have followed up people report, we followed up, we've tried to get the digital fingerprint of where things are coming from. We've liaised with people who have expertise in the field, both legal and technical, as well as with some of the platforms, in order to ensure, one, that we're able to respond quite specifically to issues, and two, that where there are difficulties, we are able to ensure that there is an intervention in terms of taking things down. Having said that, obviously the key thing for us is to ensure that I don't want to sort of be repeating this in a sense of boredom, but just to really encourage people, the more detail we get, the more specifics we get, the more we can actually act. And we say to the public, if you don't see specifics in your tweets and whatever comes onto your system, please ask for those. Please don't automatically assume that this is something that is without some sort of other kind of agenda that is behind it. And, you know, unfortunately, a time of an election, particularly one that is quite highly contested, and we know that this is such a case in point, we have situations where people, for a range of reasons, being angry, being disenchanted, having their own political agenda to pursue, do things that are deliberately aimed at creating difficulties. So just to give you a different kind of example, we had some situations where, notwithstanding all of the measures that we put in place around electricity supply, where we had people deliberately tampering with electricity supply.
Wow.
Now, that wasn't an issue of Eskom not doing things or us not putting contingency plans. It was a deliberate attempt to undermine. So I think we see the same type of thing within the information and disinformation sphere.
Janet, and I'm so impressed with, we saw the first instance of it coming through from Emelo, and it a lot. It's been now widely reported that all of those ballots have been quarantined. But and then what? So the ballots have been quarantined, but are we going to see, you know, a very heavy and swift response in terms of people must go to jail so that this doesn't happen again?
I mean, we are very, very determined that where these things have happened, we have most certainly pursued issues both within our internal investigative systems, also with the police, and we are absolutely determined that people who've been involved in these things really need to have the consequences brought upon them. And when you talk about us dealing with things swiftly, well, first of all, it's not just swift. It has to be transparent. It has to be able to be something that the political parties are aware of, that the public is aware of. And, of course, it has to be within the framework of the law, because we have to process these things 24/7 until we get to a point that we can pronounce something that reflects the will of the South African people who have cast their votes.
The IEC has done a fantastic job so far. 5 times in a row, we're happy with that.
Yeah.
We, you know, every time we recognize that each and every election that we confront different challenges. Some of those challenges are global challenges. You mentioned the one of disinformation. Some of those challenges are our own internally created ones, and South Africans, as we know, can be particularly creative, not always in the correct way. And so we have to grow. We have to, in each and every occasion, we have to recognize, you know, if we look at the at issues of the past, whether it's local government elections and issues of busing and addresses and so on, we've had to step in and say we've got to step up to that plate and get our systems even better as we're moving along. And that's what we're very determined to do, even in response to what's happening in these elections.
If you don't hear it from anybody else, you can hear it from me. I, for one, am very grateful. Thank you for staying up all night. A lot of the officials have done. And I'm sure you're looking forward to a little bit of rest in the coming weeks.
Well, while we're still in the thick of things, how long does it usually take to get all these results in? I mean, you guys have got a couple of elections under the belt now, so you have some idea of what the process is like. Would we expect some kind of definitive result by tonight?
I'm obviously not in the position of having the ability of future vision, but I would say that that's an impossibility. You know, usually because we transmit results to everybody as we get them audited and so on, you know, most media houses and parties and public and so on know the basics as they unfold. And as I've indicated, these are unfolding steadily, but we are not pushing. So today is Thursday. Usually we begin to see some serious indications by Friday. But in any situation, as the Commission, we have to process much more carefully, not so much what is part of the normal transmission, but where there are issues of objections, where there are issues of concern, where our internal systems throw things up. Now, we can't tell you that easily in advance, but all we can commit to is ensuring that we are keeping you informed, we are keeping the public informed as we are processing things. We don't want to do things in a manner that people are having question marks. We're simply saying we've already indicated, we have received some allegations already that we regard as being serious, and we're not going to try and gloss over them. We are going to deal with them, and that may take time. Our hope has been, as you may know, that we would be in a position to make the official announcement of results on Saturday, but if that is, and if it's possible before, we most certainly would do that. If it's not possible by then, we have to do it within the time period that the law allows.
All right. Well, that all sounds very positive. I wish you luck for the next couple of days. As Pumi says, there's still a lot ahead of you, but much of the work has been done. Some polling stations, I'm getting reports from people who were there for a minute, 2 minutes, 3 minutes, 5 minutes. I ended up waiting for an hour, but there are people who waited for up to 2 hours in certain places, 3 hours in others. Is there any kind of explanation for why it would take extra long in certain places and why it was much more efficient in others? And this is across the board, you know, whatever time of day, however different the populations in those areas are. Why is it that some are efficient and some are not?
Look, there are a few factors. The one factor which we, you know, I think we have also made clear is that there is obviously a human factor in the sense that we have systems in place and we have people who are trained and who undergo competency tests. But in an operation involving, you know, nearly 190,000 volunteers, you're going to get a difference, and you're going to get differences in the way in which people are able to respond to the unexpected as well as to the expected. So that's one aspect. The second is that we did have a situation where, in order to try and accommodate South Africans as best as we can, mm-hmm. we also indicated to South Africans who weren't able to go to their registered, you know, the voting station where they're actually registered, that there are arrangements to enable them to go within their province to other voting stations. And what that meant was that some of the voting stations were, you know, you have to fill out a particular a form, your, you know, which is effectively an affidavit. You have to be able to be subjected to a level of process that will take an extra amount of time when those things happen. So that's some of the reasons. There are related to that. There were some issues because of that resulted in delays because people didn't have a sufficient quantity of some of the forms, or in some cases, unfortunately, some of the ballots. And so there was waiting for some of that to come through. So those are things we're going to have to reflect on as a commission, as much as we have attempted to accommodate. We may have to look together with our party liaison committee and our people who will occupy positions in the legislature how to make that an even more closely managed process than it is today.
Well, listen, congrats again, as Pumi said, and I think most of us reiterate that it's good to see that the IEC's got their show on the road, and that it seems mostly things are going ahead. And that is the vice chair of the IEC, Janet Love. Janet, thank you so much for speaking to us. I'll give you a quick look at the latest results as they pour in this morning. And we're doing constant updates through the course this morning. Almost 19% of the vote counted, 18.94%. 53.91% of that going to the ANC so far. 27.13% to the DA, 7.84% to the EFF. Those are the early exit polls that we've got now. Further down the list, the Vryheidsfront Plus, IFP, ACDP, and GUD, all the way down into the just more than 10,000. The UDM just sort of messing around somewhere just under 10,000 votes at this point.
Listen, yeah.
That's in the national election.
Our fave and friend,
yes,
Canthan, yes, and his purple cow, got more votes so far than Andile.
Yeah, in the BLF.
In the BLF.
That's not surprising. But the one thing that did interest me is I looked at the Northern Cape. They've already counted 58% of their votes.
Yes, because but there's not a lot of people.
There's nobody there. They've got huge voting districts and they've got very few people. But 58% of the Northern Cape counted. And at this point, 51% of that province goes to the ANC, 32% to the DA, and 6.82% to the EFF. So
I'm intrigued at seeing... after the big rally that the EFF had in KZN, like last week, I think it was,
mm-hmm.
that they're actually coming in after the DA,
yeah,
in KZN.
The ANC are at 53%, and remember, only 7% of the vote in KZN counted, so very, very difficult to gauge anything there. But the ANC at 53, the IFP at 22%, and the DA at 12, the EFF all the way down at 7%.
I told you people about Ushenge and his very strong and consistent
damn right
single-minded proposition. Just trust us.
That's it. All right, when we come back, we'll get into some more news. We'll speak to Gareth van Onselen and get to the Burning Platform, which is brought to you by Nando's. All of that and more next on cliffcentral.com. The day after the elections, more results on the way too. Stick around for that.
This is cliffcentral.com.